This week, we visit a special festival in outback Queensland that raises money to pay for music lessons for local children, and meet a Welsh farming couple with a hankering for fresh pork sausages. We're trackside at the Santa Teresa Bush Races in Central Australia, and I can assure you, no manicured lawns or rose bushes there. And we head behind the counter at the Scone Bar with the CWA ladies at the Royal Hobart Show.
And everybody has their own particular talents. You'll meet Chris, who's making the scones. The scones are made on site. And to be an apprentice scone maker, you don't actually have to kill somebody, but you do have to wait in line.
A good bit of old-fashioned country hospitality later on in the program. But let's start in Richmond in outback Queensland, where they're tackling the issue of music education head on.
Anyone ever heard of the Beatles?
Yes.
Yeah, mostly?
I'm sitting in a small school library in Richmond in northwest Queensland, halfway between Townsville and Mount Isa. Around me, 50 children sit cross-legged on the floor. Even though this song was a hit decades before they were born, they sit quietly and listen, captivated. Hello, I'm Miriam Hall, and hearing a professional musician is a treat for these kids. This town, because of its remote location, doesn't often get performers. Young Clancy is in grade one.
I live on the property. It's really far out of town. I do the guitar at home. Dad helps me sometimes, and Mum. I like the rock and roll because it was loud and it was fast.
I'm Adelaide and I'm 10. I liked that Spanish music thing because it was quick. It was a guitar.
Yeah. And did you like the sound of it?
Yes, because it was fast and sometimes it was slow. It was like changing a lot.
I think it was pretty awesome because I barely ever hear music like that because not many people come out here.
This school concert is part of the Richmond October Moon Festival, an annual event which brings jazz and blues performers from around the country to the town. The festival raises enough money to pay for music lessons and music scholarships for these children. It's also a chance for locals to come together and enjoy some live music gigs without having to go to the city. Casey Lord started this festival to make sure her community doesn't miss out.
We wanted to do something for the community, and we did a survey, and out of that survey came that there was no music at all taught in the community. So we decided to hold a music festival, and we didn't want it to just be any old music festival. We wanted it to be something, a music festival with a difference. So we decided to call it a jazz festival. And that was 6 years ago, and the purpose was to raise money for musical education in the community. We've now got 12 piano students, 3 violin students, and a music group that comes and goes, and a children's choir of, I think there's 9 in the children's choir. So, you know, for a small community, and we are a very small community, I think we've been really successful. And the other lovely thing is that music now happens at every social event, public social event that's going. Somebody grabs a guitar, or there's always got a band or something. Something's always happening.
And it's all because of that festival.
Yes. So, and I think music just sets, relaxes everybody, and it sets a great tone. It crosses all barriers. It's wonderful for a social gathering.
It's not just about your region, is it? You want to try and, I guess, put Richmond on the map for another reason, apart from cattle.
Yeah, I do. And I also want to create something, we all want to create something different in the community. Something once a year we can put on something that just doesn't happen anywhere else in North Queensland.
It must be wonderful for you to see the children performing, knowing that they've had that opportunity to get lessons because of the festival itself.
Yeah, it's lovely. And the other thing we do is we have a scholarship fund, and that scholarship fund funds the musical education for the first year when the kids go to boarding school. Those kids are now coming back and performing at the October Moon Festival, and it is wonderful. It's really gratifying to see, because often it, you know, because we subsidise the lessons, it can be a big drain for parents to then start putting out money for lessons when they go to boarding school on top of everything else. So I think it really helps keep that musical thing going in families.
Yeah, so it's not just at the end of primary school it all stops.
Absolutely.
Why do you think that it's important to have kids learning music? I mean, obviously not everyone's going to go on to have a musical career. Why, even so, did you want to try and invest in something like that?
I think, like a lot of things that parents do, it comes out of your own failed aspirations. I'd love to have been a piano player and never was. But I also believe that music is good for the soul, it's good for creativity, and I think it puts people into another zone. And I think it's important for us all to be able to get away from the business, away from cattle, and be in another zone just for a little while. And I believe music does that to people.
In Richmond, the heat soars to above 40 degrees, but around dusk it becomes a perfect temperature. The evening of the October Moon Festival is no exception, and Melbourne duo Wizard and Oz is on the stage. They've toured around Australia, but never to this part of the country, and after performing, they're spending some time at a local property.
My name's Dave McMillan. I am the Oz part of the Wizard and Oz.
And you too, Andrew, if you don't mind.
I'm the Wizard part of the Wizard and Oz, and I play piano and sing.
What's it like coming to a place like this and playing?
You know, we come away and we just don't realise what people are dealing with, I suppose. You know, the severity of this weather. We don't have any drought problems, and because we don't see it, everyone down there thinks everything's fine everywhere else. You know, where everything's okay, but obviously it's not here. And for us, you know, we come up and we see this and see the way people live. You know, we're lucky we can go to the shop anytime. And we don't have to go 120 kilometres to go and get some milk if we run out, you know.
What kind of impact or what kind of value is it for you as a musician, as a performer, to come out to a place like this?
Great. Yesterday, playing to the children, that was really nice. They were so attentive and joined in and asked questions, and they were interested to react. Yeah. I love it.
So tired of trying out on the road again.
At the heart of this festival is developing musical talent of the local kids. 14-year-old Narita is from Richmond and, thanks to the festival, got the chance to learn guitar. She's now at boarding school in Charters Towers, where she's still learning to play.
We don't have a lot of opportunities out here. If you think about it, we don't have a lot of music teachers out here, but the October Moon's helping that.
Why do you think you love guitar so much? What about it do you love?
I don't know, it's just that it can come everywhere with me. It is legit my baby.
What about when you're playing, what is it about playing that you like?
It's the thrill that you get when you're up on stage and then people crowd around you. If I'm in the dorms and I'm practicing, people come crowd around you, go, "Oh, you're so good," but really I'm like, "Oh, I'm just practicing and I don't sound that good at the moment."
The other kids like listening in the boarding school?
Yeah, it's great. They all join in as well. We have a few songs that we all sing together.
Despite the scarcity of teachers, there's no doubt there's plenty of talent in regional Australia. Justin Borg is a mustering pilot and self-taught guitarist and singer who knows how much people love live music.
There's quite a demand for it out this way, and we're pretty blessed that is the case, you know.
People want to hear you play?
Well, I think so. Maybe they're just desperate out this way. I don't know.
But he does worry about the shortage of music teachers and the effect that might have on local kids.
Sort of at a disadvantage a bit because you don't have the same opportunity people do on the coast, and I think that's the biggest thing that we've got to promote out here, because there is such a talent, like you've seen tonight. Like, these young kids have got such talent, but there's no one to bring it out, you know. There's no...
But you do.
Oh, we try. And I'm no musician. Like, I play and sing, and it's something I've taught myself to do. But when you're talking about real musicians that come from the cities and that are educated in music, I think that's what we need to push out here, is to educate kids in music rather than have them realise they want to play music when they're at the age of 25. It's a late stage.
In a way.
Yeah, it is. It's not too late, but you know, it's better if you can kick them off early and have them learn music.
back before the stage, and Casey Lord says, fundraising aside, it's important for the people of this community to get together.
I think it's really important to come together as a community to do something special, to see your friends, have an afternoon out, swap stories about the drought if that's what floats your boat, or talk about something completely different just for one afternoon. I think psychologically it's really important that people do that.
We just provide, we sort of make a pig day spa. They've got a nice big wallow, they've got some shelter, they've got something to chew on, they all sleep together. And yeah, they just seem to have they seem to enjoy themselves outside.
What more could a pig want than its very own muddy day spa? Hello, I'm Kat McGoran on a rare breeds pig farm at Tarraville in Victoria's Gippsland region. When Richard and Sylvia Jones moved to Australia from Wales, they were disappointed to find that they couldn't buy their favourite pork sausages. So they decided to make their own, using pork from their very own pigs. And that's where the rare Wessex Subtlebacks come in. Let's go and meet the Joneses and their pigs in mud.
Yeah, my name's Sylvia Jones. Yeah, we live down in Tarraville and we farm Wessex Subtleback pigs. They are a rare breed, so we're trying to increase their numbers. Yeah, they're just really easy to handle. They've got good temperament. And
my name's Richard Jones. I suppose I'm a pig farmer. The mothers are really good at farrowing. They forage really, really well. And yeah, they sort of look after themselves. They really love being outdoors, and they seem to have a happy pig life here.
When you were considering which breed to get, Richard, I'm assuming you would have considered some of the white pigs that are more common. What made you go down the path with these guys and the Wessex Saddlebacks?
Well, we started with two large whites and two Wessex Saddlebacks, and instantly we noticed that with the lopped ears of the Saddlebacks and their temperament, it was just chalk and cheese between the Saddleback and the white pig. So we decided to go for the more docile, non-aggressive pig.
One of the things with the Saddlebacks that I understand that they're a bit slower growing than some other varieties. Is that what you've discovered?
Yeah, they are a little bit. But then good food's worth waiting for, so, you know.
They do take longer to grow, but the food input is also less. The Saddleback is such a really good forager that the open paddock is where is best for them. We've actually got our girls on a bit of a diet at the minute because we've actually overfed them a bit too much grain because they've got all the paddock out there. And summertime, we watched our Saddlebacks actually surpass the white pig in growth through the summer just because they're a much hardier type pig for the harsh climatic conditions of Australia.
What's it like farming pigs and handling these piglets, you know, every day? I mean, they're just gorgeous, like an emotional...
You just get to know their personalities and everything as well. And, yeah, don't give the piglets a name. Only the sows, only the ones you keep in. Yeah, because you get too attached otherwise, so... Yeah.
And they also, when they get a cold as well, they suck like human beings, you know. They'll have a cold for 2 to 3 days and they'll just suck and they won't get up and they'll just lie there with their sad face with a runny nose. And in 2 or 3 days, they bounce straight back then. But, yeah, you get to know them.
Do you think it's a breed that will become more utilised in Australia?
Yeah, I think momentum is growing for the rare breeds. I think people are realising that the rare breeds are a much hardier type animal. They do grow slower, but they're a lot less maintenance. So you have to weigh up your looking after and your maintenance costs of performance animals compared to a slower performance animal, which has probably got the better flavour, and they tend to look after themselves. You know.
Richard and Sylvia Jones and their rare Wessex Saddleback pigs. Still to come on Rural Reporter, they're in for a wild ride at the Santa Teresa Bush Races, and it's time for scones, jam and cream in Hobart.
Well, smack bang in front of me is the panorama of a snow-capped Mount Wellington. To my left, the cacophony of Sideshow Alley. To my right, Showbag Pavilion. Hello, I'm Sally Dacus. Welcome to the Royal Hobart Show 2013. I'm here because I want to visit a Royal Hobart institution. Yes, it's the Scone Bar. Now, the Country Women's Association, as a lobby group, says they're more than just scones and jam and cream. but are they really? Stay with me and we'll find out. I'm with Lindy Cleland, who's the Southern Group President of the Country Women's Association. So this is the Scone Bar, this is HQ.
It is very much the case. This is the place that people who've come to the show over the years look for, the Scone Bar. While it's nice and quiet and all you can hear is the ladies working during the day, this room will be full of parents, grandparents, three and four generations who've been coming to this particular place for their scones, jam and cream to sit down and have a cup of tea. This is one of the places that most people will visit when they visit the show today.
Now, Lindy, I do also know that the Country Women's Association has run a campaign to say your organisation is actually more than scones, isn't it?
That's right. And that's one of the reasons that we sort of try to say to people, look, you know, always we've looked at a practical application. So where the show is normally synonymous with expensive food that's bad for you, the CWA, here personifies the fact this is good country food at reasonable prices, comfortable chairs, and we find a lot of people come along and they talk to us. They'll come and look at our various brochures and our information, and rather than a hard sell of somebody standing at the door saying, come and join CWA, we try to show by example what country women are all about.
Now, you're going to take me in behind the Scone Bar.
That's right. You're going to go into the Holy of Holies. We have over 60 ladies from every branch in the south of the state come and help over the course of the 4 days. And it's very much a case of people who do nothing else all year will say, I'll come and do a shift at the Scone Bar. And everybody has their own particular talents. You'll meet Chris, who's making the scones. The scones are made on site. And to be an apprentice scone maker, you don't actually have to kill somebody, but you do have to wait in line.
This is kind of secret women's business then, perhaps, isn't it? And I can see the ladies over here shelling the eggs with their gingham aprons on.
Yes, very much. They've got their gingham aprons. The whole thing about the Country Women's Association that people fail to understand is that it developed to give women opportunity not only to help other women but to help themselves and to learn things. We have various committees and you work your way up to the head of the committee, and the lady over here in that gingham apron with the eggs in her hand, who I'm about to introduce you to, is Anne Doble, who has been the major moving force behind this Scone Bar for a huge number of years.
Sorry, I'm wet. I won't shake hands.
Now, Lindy tells me you're very busy, but you're going to give me a little bit of a description of what's happening in the hub of the kitchen here. Now, we've got the ovens over here, the hallowed scone ovens.
The ovens are only used once a year for scone making.
Sally, if you have a look, many of your listeners, if you say that these are a Derby stove, and that's in Fahrenheit. We work with a double Derby oven with Fahrenheit. Even though the gauge tells you, the ladies can open the oven and say that's not hot enough without looking at the gauge. Oops.
Scones are going in the oven.
Ooh, lovely.
Toasty and warm.
Give me about 10 minutes more, I'll let you know.
Mary Hanslow, tell us what's happening here.
Oh, well, we're just kneading the dough to make some scones. I've been boiling eggs up to go in the sandwiches and turning sausages, so I've been a jack-of-all-trades this morning.
So what happens? You have to bake them as people come in, or you just keep doing a stream?
We just keep a steady all day, don't we, Anne?
We bake through to about 2 o'clock or so. We do an afternoon batch as well to go up to the craft hall. We keep them fed twice a day up there.
So do you have any idea how many scones you're going to bake here over 4 days?
We counted them some 4 or 5 years ago, and we did over 3,000 in 4 days. And I'd have to count the loaves of bread to tell you the sandwiches. I mean, there'd be more, I reckon. Looking back, it's fun. While it's on, no.
There's no manicured green lawns and certainly no roses blooming along the barrier fence. The Santa Teresa bush races in Central Australia are about as far from Flemington and the Melbourne Cup Carnival as you can get. Hello, I'm Carmen Brown. at a very hot and dusty racetrack about 80 kilometres east of Alice Springs, where the Santa Teresa community is celebrating 60 years of bush racing. This would have to be one of the wildest races in the Northern Territory, as Aboriginal stockmen from across the region saddle up to show off their riding skills on some very wild horses.
The night rider we got is Barry Kavanagh. Horse name is Dynamite.
Also Raymond Palmer has helped organise the weekend event and also doubles as the race caller.
We got good experienced jockeys riding on the horses. We got young jockeys from Hermansburg, Santa Teresa and surrounding communities. Come in and Wallace Rock Hall as well. We come in and compete each other.
Some of these horses, from what I've heard, are quite wild. Are they straight out of the paddock?
Oh, we muster them and break them in and get it used to people and cars and see them gallop. If they gallop, we'll put it towards the race.
So a little bit of training, but not a huge amount of training.
Yeah, just a little bit of training and just get it used to the track, our track, because our track's a little dusty and a little soft.
Now, there was a bit of an accident here yesterday. What happened there?
Yeah, there was a little incident happened yesterday. Yeah, because that horse came too close to the winning post.
He ran into it?
Ran into it.
And how's the young rider who was on that horse?
Well, I think it's he's all right. Altwork, I reckon, is okay, yeah.
Just part of bush racing, isn't it, really? Sometimes you fall off.
Yeah, that's our life, you know. When you fall off, you fall off.
Hello, my name is Philip Ellis. I help with organising up the Santa Teresa horse race here out in the community.
We're just at the mounting yard. What are you doing here just at the moment?
Oh, I'm also a community police officer. My job is to make sure that they don't jump on the horse if they've been drinking. If they've been drinking overnight, I come and it's a policy from the race committee and the community. Nobody jump on a horse if they've been drinking overnight or if they still got alcohol in their blood. If they do, they won't be racing. And it's most important because it's for their safety, for themselves, and plus, that's what I keep on saying to everybody, is this, the race is every year, so make the best out of yourself to come to the races and enjoy while you, and if you're a stockman, come here, make the best out of yourself because you're a horse rider, and just ride the horses, you know?
And have they all passed muster so far?
Yeah, all of them passed today and yesterday. They are the champions, you know, and they are a legend because they ride the horses and if they fall off, they always jump on. They also must wear helmets. They must have helmets too, yeah. Helmet, you know, put it on just for your safety.
Yeah, because some of these horses are quite wild, aren't they?
Yeah, all these horses are wild because they just picked them up last week, maybe 2-3 days ago. And they're all riding it, you know, and that's really good.
And is it friendly competition or is it pretty serious?
No, I keep it friendly, you know, because just say to them, look, just go out there to enjoy. There's always going to be one winner. Just make sure that you go out there and be proud of what you do.
Community Police Officer Philip Ellis, trackside at the Santa Teresa races in Central Australia. And thanks to Carmen Brown for that story.